in the world of sports. She's got next. Next. Here's Jordan Robinson.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of She's Got Next. I'm Jordan Robinson, your host, and I am women's sports number one fan. Yes, you heard that here first. Today, we have a jam-packed show for you. I'm so excited for you to listen to it. We've got the latest headlines, the most up-to-date news, and we have two incredible interviews for you later on. So stick around for those. They are great. In case you missed last week's episode, I interviewed professional softball player Sydney Romero, a midfielder for the Athletes Unlimited Softball League championship winning talent. We talked about how her family is deeply rooted in softball and baseball. Three of her four siblings are pro athletes. You guys, big deal. And how she's excited about the future of pro softball. After a successful inaugural AUSL season, the Talons swept the Bandits in a two-game series, but all season long, the Talons had been the team to beat. They were the regular season champs too, and it just seemed like all the pieces fell into place from the first ever draft to make this dream team. They finished 18-6 and hoisted the trophy, the championship trophy, that is, last week. But on today's episode of She's Got Next, we're diving deep into professional women's soccer and the NWSL. The league took a brief hiatus because of popular international tournaments, but we're back and ready for the second half of the season. So you'll hear from two people that will kind of break down everything about NWSL. So first, we'll hear from Meg Linehan, a senior writer for The Athletic. She gets us up to speed on who are the teams, the top teams in the standings, how the NWSL looks to capitalize and build on the momentum that these record-breaking overseas tournaments brought in, and what surprises are in store as we race to the playoffs. Then later in our Business of Women's Sports section, we'll talk to Dome Guasque, the general manager of the newest NWSL expansion team, Boston Legacy FC. He'll discuss what those first steps that have to happen when building a franchise from the bottom up, how investors are a huge piece to success, and what the future holds for women's soccer in the United States, and how the Boston Legacy FC kind of fits into all of that. So that's coming up soon. But before we get to our guests, let's dive into the Women's Sports Week recap. For today's Women's Sports Week recap, I wanted to focus on something very specific. The crazy WNBA midseason trade deadline. Lots of movement. So a lot has happened. Let's review. The first shoe to drop was the Dallas Wings trading Dejanay Carrington to the Minnesota Lynx for Diamond Miller and an injured Carly Samuelson. The Minnesota Lynx, who are sitting number one in the standings, somehow got even better. So I'm excited for her to be able to thrive in Minnesota. Her first season in Dallas this year did not go well. So yeah, happy for Minnesota Lynx there. Next, we saw the Washington Mystics trade Brittany Sykes to the Seattle Storm for Alicia Clark and a 2026 first-round pick. So despite this being a huge shocker to most, giving up on Sykes, the Mystics are thinking of the future. Now they have three, yes, three, actually it might be four, first-round picks next year. Then the Mystics weren't done. The final buzzer beating of the trade deadline, they make another trade. They sent Aaliyah Edwards, who, if you've been listening to the show from the very beginning, we had her on as one of our very first guests. She is now going to the Connecticut Sun for J.C. Sheldon and a first round pick swap. So yeah, now they're going to have four. They're going to have four first round picks. Before these trades, the Mystics were only one spot out of a playoff contention, and they've made a run, but the front office decided to punt and think about next year. I don't mind it. We'll talk more about these trades next week as we see the players get into these new teams, new systems, but a lot going on there. All right. I hope you feel caught up. After the break, we are going to hear from Meg Linehan, senior staff writer for The Athletic, about the NWSL's second half of the season. This is She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson.
From Odyssey Sports, it's She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson.
Meg Linehan, senior women's soccer writer for The Athletic. Welcome to She's Got Next.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So excited to talk about soccer. And when I say we talk about soccer, I mostly mean you because you are the expert and that's why we called you here. But a lot is going on and I want to kind of pick your brain. And first, I want to start with, you know, the NWSL is back stateside. As play resumes, kind of catch us up. What were some of those big storylines from the first half of the season that stuck out to you?
Yeah, I mean, right at the moment, I think the number one question as we move from the first half of the season into the second half of the season is, can anyone catch up to the Kansas City Current, right? They dominated the first half of the season, made a lot of games look really easy. They're unbeaten at home. And so now the question is, are they going to run away on the way to the NWSL Shield for the best record in the NWSL regular season, or is someone actually going to be able to catch up to them? Obviously, last year we saw a lot of really dominant teams. Orlando Pride had a season that was arguably one of the best women's pro seasons we've seen in the U.S. through the history of professional soccer. Orlando's in second place. Can they maybe make up some of that distance? Are they going to be a threat in the playoffs? But there are also a lot of teams chasing playoff spots that we might be surprised by. Teams like Racing Louisville, Angel City is still in the hunt. Somehow Gotham FC, which is one of the more dominant teams of recent NWSL history, is currently in eighth place in the league. So there's a lot going on right at the moment. And second half of the year is always it's an interesting race to the finish every time.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure, just like it is in a lot of pro leagues, that right now the standings are not what they're going to be at the end because everyone's making changes to try to race up towards the top.
Yes, totally. We've seen a lot of big signings in this break. Washington Spirit also are definitely, like, if you're coming into this league, Washington Spirit are going to be a really interesting team to watch. In the second half of the year, you probably have heard of Trinity Rodman, right? But Trinity Rodman hasn't really been able to play in the first half of the year. She's been dealing with this lingering back injury. She's now back. She clearly seems like she is ready to go. But also they signed Italian striker Sofia Cantore, who featured at the Euros this summer. So, like, all these teams are kind of making moves. And I do feel like, you know, the NWSL is a league that is known for chaos, and we should expect nothing less for the second half of the year.
What a thing to be known for. I love it. I love it. Well, you took a question straight from me because I am a huge Trinity Rodman fan, and I have been waiting to see her highlights pop back up on my feed. So it is true. She is coming back. She's cleared. It's looking like she's going to be playing.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the really interesting things was she came back. She did some media, you know, back in the training environment for the Spirit, and basically said, hey, I had been gaslighting myself about how much pain I was in. And I stepped back, I got healthy. You know, she's been training. What's been interesting is obviously, you know, she's now dating a tennis player. We've seen her kind of hop around the world for tennis tournaments. And she's had to defend herself too, of like, I am actually working on coming. I'm not just out here like in tennis boxes every weekend. There's a lot of work going on behind the scenes. But I think seeing a healthy Trinity Rodman, I honestly don't think we've seen that for a couple of years. She's really put her body through the ringer between 2023 World Cup. The 2024 Olympics was hard on everyone. I mean, that was a time, I will tell you. And so for her to be able to take some time off to truly get her body right and to understand that that's what's going to keep her career going in the right direction, I think is a really important step for her, not just as a player, but as a human being. And so I'm glad that she was able to like get all of that in order.
Also, total side note here, but I am still furious at all of the Wimbledon announcers who would call out Trinity Rodman as if she was just this random girlfriend of Ben Shelton and not a huge superstar athlete in her own right.
Or, not, you know, someone who like won a gold medal, right? You know, who, yeah, 100%. I mean, that's tennis. Tennis is its own, it's a ball game in terms of it's where that's at. So we got to save and do a whole different podcast for that one.
Yes, yes, we do. Okay, so NWSL has taken a break, and that was because there were a lot of international play with the Euros and a bunch of other international tournaments going on. So how does the league kind of try to capture that momentum coming off of these huge tournaments that kind of captured the spotlight for a little bit?
Yeah, it is very different, right? Because, I mean, there have been breaks for World Cups, for Olympics, and this is different. Although the league is now, I think, really more international than it's ever been in terms of they couldn't afford to miss all these players from between Euros, WAFCON in Africa, and then Copa America is the third tournament happening down in Ecuador right now. But, I mean, there are a million Brazilians in this league. There's some Colombians. Mm-hmm. There's Nigerians. Like, all of these players are out and about doing their thing. And so now what is going to be really interesting is I think it's a lot harder to harness some of that energy from these three very different tournaments compared to a World Cup, which I think everybody kind of instinctively understands no matter what their familiarity is with the sport itself. On the good news is they've had some players that had some truly amazing performances. You think about, again, Sofia Cantore with Italy. You think about Ann-Kathrin Berger with Germany. You think about Esther with Spain, like Jess Carter with England. There are teams that are going to be ready to benefit. You think about Bay FC having Oshuala from Nigeria. There's ways for the teams to take advantage. And I think the question is, how is the league going to maybe position itself? And my big thing coming out of this break now is looking at the TV numbers around Euros from Fox, right? Where I think the tournament really did have this breakout summer. More people are watching. It's a lot more instructive about where the growth of the sport is overall, maybe compared to a tournament that featured US women's national team. But now I do think the pressure is on for the NWSL to finally truly crack a million viewers for their championship later this fall, because We've seen these numbers coming out of the Euros, and the NWSL has to start matching that energy in a much more significant way.
Mm-hmm. It seems like a marketing no-brainer to say, hey, remember these superstars that you were just tuning into? You get to still watch them play in the United States right now. So it, 100%. That seems like a no-brainer.
Hopefully Yes.
We're not on their payroll, so maybe they'll call us to ask for some tips, but that seems like what they should be doing. But I also wanted to ask, for the newbie soccer fans like myself, how does kind of the formation of the roster for the U.S. Women's National Team, and they were playing friendlies in the end of June and July, how does that kind of fit into all of this and the schedule right now?
Yeah, I mean, so the next international break isn't until October. So we're not actually going to see the U.S. Women's National Team for another couple of months. And that's going to be an interesting piece of this, too, because 2025 for the U.S. Women's National Team is actually this kind of like, it's not a rest year, but it's an off year where they don't have a major tournament. Qualification for the World Cup isn't until next year. And then you have a World Cup. So the pressure has been off, and head coach Emma Hayes has been allowed to like explore the player pool, find some new combinations, give players time off. We're missing, you know, triple espresso, that line from the Olympics, have all been missing either for injury or two of the three are pregnant. And so there has been kind of this like, oh, all right, the U.S. is maybe like out of the glare of the spotlight a little bit. Mm-hmm. But now what I think is going to start gearing up is Emma Hayes has seen what she's needed to, in theory, and is going to start building that roster and start building towards qualifying. But the U.S. Women's National Team and the NWSL as a league, like they've always been super linked in terms of they play off each other. For a while, U.S. Soccer ran the league. They've split up since then. But there is a sense of these two things are important to each other. And now this summer has maybe given the league an opportunity to be like, okay, but we have all these international players, you know, like we've got folks like Marta, right, from Brazil. And so it's going to put a little bit more pressure, I think, on, you know, the next generation of US stars to really step up and say, hey, we can control this league. We can own this league. We can be the face of this league. And that's, I think, a good pressure for the US women's national team moving forward.
And from what I understand, the U.S. Women's National Team is kind of going through this change of people. There's a lot of newbies, a lot of young guns, a lot of players have retired. So it just seems like there's just all of this change kind of going on. So maybe this off year or this down year was kind of needed as we're forming a team from scratch, which maybe hasn't had to happen for a while, right?
honestly, like, we haven't seen this level of debuts for a while. And to be fair, Emma Hayes came in right before the Olympics, right? And basically walked in and had to win an Olympics with the U.S. Women's National Team. So there was that immediate mission. And then knowing 2025 is a year where there's not really, you know, an international tournament for them to look forward to, she was able to take that step back and say, okay, we're going to build a plan. We're going to do all this other work. And then we're going to figure out what the actual player pool is and not just our top 20, 25 players, right? I've got to see a whole bunch of people come through camp. Alyssa Nayer, who was the goalkeeper for the U.S. in the 2019 and 2023 World Cups, in the 2024 Olympics, retired and basically said, hey, you got to find my successor. And I want you to be able to find that without having me hanging around and always being this option. So it has been it's almost like a deep sea exploration rather than like a mission to somewhere. And so that's been exciting to watch, but we're never going to know the full picture until we start getting into meaningful games, like a qualification for the World Cup itself.
Got it. Okay. That is super helpful. Because I'm seeing it all go at the same time, but seeing which one kind of takes precedent, who's partnering with who, that's really helpful. Yes. But going back to the NWSL, because, you know, you said it, it seems like the biggest storyline and the biggest thing that we are all going to be watching the second half of the season is who is going to catch, or if someone is going to catch, the Kansas City Current. But are there any sleeper teams, any sleeper players, or anyone that maybe could make some noise coming into this second half?
Yeah, I mean, I think the two teams that I'm looking at the most right at the moment in terms of real wild cards as to being able to upset a KC Current or an Orlando Pride, San Diego Wave were not expected to have this great year, right? Naomi Girma goes over to Chelsea. That's kind of their number one signature player after Alex Morgan retires last year. And they're in third place. Delphine Cascarino, who plays in France, like popping off, MVP candidate right there. They're kind of loading up on the Frenchies right now, which is kind of fun. They're currently in third. New head coach coming in, used to be Arsenal coach over in England. He's adjusted super well. That is not always a guarantee for foreign coaches coming into the NWSL, who kind of get, you know, that welcome to the OC moment in terms of NWSL style play. They've been really dynamic, really fun to watch. And then Portland Thorns, who have been one of the more traditional powerhouses in the NWSL, have really kind of come together. They had also lost a whole bunch of like big known players, Becky Sauerbrunn, Christine Sinclair, Megan Klingenberg, all retired. And they've got this younger leader now in Sam Coffey, who's on the U.S. Women's National Team, defensive midfielder. And they know how to win. Even though it's a newer team, this team is like bred to win. And I think they really want to get back to the ways of the early days of the NWSL when they were consistently one of the most dominant teams. So again, anyone can beat anyone on any given day. Like, we've seen it over the past couple of years where maybe that won't always play out, but the top teams are still vulnerable. And yeah, there's a lot to look forward to in the back half of this year. So those are the two teams where I'm like, you could do something. You could make a run here.
Okay. Well, if Meg says it, then that's Bible. I hope that they replay this in their locker room to get fired up going into the second half of the season. Last thing I want to pick your brain about, because we're going to be talking about it on this episode, but Boston Legacy FC is coming, a new expansion team in Denver. What excites you about expansion and the growth of the NWSL as we look forward to next season, but even beyond?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's going to be so fascinating for Boston and for Denver, who are coming into this league, the expansion draft is gone. So they're going to have to build a roster via free agency, via international signings, via trades. And so this is something that we've never really seen before in this league. And the last couple batches of expansion teams have had that draft. And then we've seen teams like trade their way out of it. And, you know, there's all these maneuverings that happen before the expansion draft. And now we're in this brand new territory where they've gotten a little bit of extra money. They can maybe make some big moves. And these are two markets that I think, you know, Boston historically, I'm from the Boston area. I went to all of these Boston Breakers games over the years. There's some real history there. Denver has such a tradition of women's soccer, and there's a lot to look forward to. And there's also a lot, you know, Boston did not do great out of the gate. They had probably one of the worst launches we've ever seen in pro soccer, and they've really started to right the ship. Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, we're watching hirings, we're watching head coaches come in, we're watching technical staff come in. And this is where building a team in 2025 is such a different prospect than building it even 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious to see what that means for what they look like in 2026, because we just don't know yet what these teams are going to look like.
And that's exciting. I mean, yeah, it could go either way, but it's also really cool to build something from the ground up. And we know we talked to GM Dobe about that and the process and where do you even start? Like there's a lot to do in a little bit of time, especially when that next season is coming up quick. Well, I know that you are going to be covering it at The Athletic like you always do. Thank you, Meg, for stopping by and giving us your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you again to Meg. She's such a pro. I know I learned a lot. I hope you did too. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll dive into the business side of women's sports with an interview with Dome Guasque, the GM of Boston Legacy FC. You're listening to She's Got Next with Jordan Robinson.
Let's get down to business. Here's what's happening in the business of women's sports.
Welcome back to She's Got Next. Now it's time for Let's Get Down to Business, where we talk about the business side of women's sports. This segment will look a little different this week because we have an interview with the GM of the Boston Legacy FC. Hope you enjoy. Today, we have a very special guest that I am so excited to talk to, the general manager of Boston Legacy FC, Dome Guasque. Welcome to the show, Dome.
Hi, Jordan. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Oh, I am so excited about this team, about expansion in the NWSL. So we are just going to talk all about it. I know you're excited about that.
I'm absolutely excited. Like, obviously, I wouldn't be here if I wasn't. So, yep.
This is true. Okay, so Boston Legacy FC will start playing the NWSL in 2026. You have about, I don't know, do you guys have a countdown in the office somewhere when that first kickoff is set for?
Well, I have a huge calendar filled up with goals and timelines. If that's my countdown.
Okay, it's coming up though. It's coming up quick.
It's coming up.
How excited is the city and just the team to be able to start fresh and start this new team here in Boston?
Yeah, it's a unique opportunity, to start something from scratch, but at the same time at the top level, right? Like, so it is very, very unique for everyone, and obviously not only for myself, but the entire staff, like just the energy, right? Like you come every day to the office and it's amazing. Like just the team. And then obviously, when we go out and we do our events, and even sometimes like not in events, but I get stopped in the street, like, oh, like I look forward to the team being open. And obviously that's obviously very energizing for us and motivating. And it's great, like, to feel that, like, again, that expectation and energy that also obviously comes with a little bit of pressure. But I love that too, right? It's the part that it's part of the competition, and yeah, like I love it.
It's pressure, but it's also this community that you guys are going to be joining of other women's sports teams in the city. And we know that the PWHL is in Boston, the Boston Renegades, which is a women's tackle football, the Connecticut Sun is your neighbor right down the street. So how does that feel to kind of join this historic group of women's sports who are doing really well?
Yeah, like obviously, as I mentioned before, obviously adds pressure because they're doing well, and obviously we want to be as exciting as they are for the community. But at the same time, I feel like we can all support each other in lifting the community and yeah, like obviously and making every day more exciting, because now, like, hey, it's almost every day of the week. If you're a Bostonian, a New Englander, you're going to have a team that you can support. Right. So yeah, it's not like that. You'll need to trade off or anything. And again, it's just like seeing like, how can we strengthen the community all together and lift it up?
I love that. There should be a calendar just released on how you can support every single team all year round. That's what I'm talking about. That's some kind of fandom right there. I know that you have been in this role as general manager since December, and I was just thinking of questions for this, and I'm like, what are some things I'm curious? Where do you start? Like, you get hired and they say, we have nothing. We're starting from scratch. We're starting from blank. So when you're kind of coming into this role and as you're going through these duties on a day-to-day basis, what's kind of those first things that you want to build to start building the brand, building the team, but then also this identity of what you want from this team?
Yeah, look, I think that is where you start, like on figuring out what you wanna build before you actually build anything. And in that regard, I was lucky that we had an ownership group that had put a lot of time into that. Like prior to me coming here, they had been building the project for over 2 years, so they knew pretty clearly who we want to be, right? As a club, as an organization, what our identity looks like. And that was obviously something that was very important to me throughout the process prior to joining the group, in figuring out, okay, what's Boston about? What's the vision? What are the values, right? And because I felt very aligned with that, it made my decision of coming over easy. And on the other hand, like, yeah, all those months of conversations also were very useful for me to prepare and understand, okay, what is the club looking for, right? And then for me, the first month was, hey, let's not hire anyone. Let's not talk to anyone outside. Let's only inside, right? And I mean the city, right? In terms of what's the culture of the city like? What's the sports culture like? What's the league about, right? Like what are the goals for the league in general? What are the goals for the league for us, right? What are the new roles? And understanding the landscape and then building the plan for that, that was key to me. And that's how I spent like the first month and a half, again, just talking to people, but not in terms of like, let's recruiting this person or that other person or this player or that other player, just gathering information for me to, again, like get an idea of, okay, like in terms of staff, what does the staff need to look like for us to be closer to success in this league? And then obviously player wise the same thing, right? And then build a plan for, again, the year ish that I had for this before we started the season. And as I said before, like building that plan of like, okay, who do we want to hire at each point, and then what type of person, what type of professional we need for each of those positions. And then at the same time, it's also keeping an open mind and understanding that this is not about the individuals. It's about the team that we end up forming. So it's always pieces. And that's why you also time things at different times. And then you prioritize, okay, this comes first. And then the next person will have to match somehow that puzzle, right? And then it gets a little bit easier in the sense that you know clearly the gaps that you have as you go hiring. But yeah, that's why, again, we needed the year and we want to do it step by step and not just like bring everybody in January.
It sounds like a very complicated game of Tetris and a puzzle that you're trying to piece together. But as you were gathering all that information and gathering things about the city and the culture, what were some of those things that you learned and that you are going to implement as you move forward?
Yeah, definitely. Like something like I've been able to experience, right, is that love for sports in Boston in general, right? And like the fact that it does not really matter if you like the sport or not, right? I normally like obviously come from a place like, yeah, I'm from Barcelona, right? Like the city and the club are one and the same. But at the same time, other than football, soccer for us, I didn't watch many of the other sports that we even had in the club, just because, okay, that's the sport that I like, I enjoy, and that was it for me. And I realized coming here, like, yeah, you're a Bostonian, you're part of this culture. So it does not really matter, right? Like, hey, you might not like ice hockey, but you still go and support the fleet, right? And And yeah, like, or you might not like rugby, and but you still like. I remember when it was freezing cold. Like I think it was back in March, and the Banshees were having their first game of the season at home, and like, yeah, just the amount of people that showed up, right, for that game, and I was surprised because obviously, like I've watched rugby a while. I played a little bit in college as well, and I knew the rules, and I was talking to a lot of people that had been to many games, didn't understand the rules. And I'm like, why did you pay to come for this? Like that you don't even understand. And I'd be like, no, like, hey, they're our team. We just come here. We show up. Right. Like that's something that I learned. It is very special about this area. And obviously, again, like that's obviously like something that I'm looking forward to experiencing, like people that maybe don't know anything about soccer, but they'll mm-hmm. still show up to our stadium and will support our team. And that's amazing.
Yeah, I know that ride or die Boston fandom from the other side. I'm a Lakers fan, so I know that. People who don't even watch basketball will automatically hate me because I am a Los Angeles Lakers fan. So it runs deep. I already know that. So going over to the roster side and the roster kind of building and your dreams for that, in the NWSL, there's no expansion draft. There's no college draft. So how do you go about kind of bringing in those players and just generally?
Yeah, like I would say it is not a huge difference. That's probably what I can take like from my past at Barcelona, because that's how football soccer works everywhere else in the world, where like players get to pick where they want to go, mm-hmm. right? And they have a say in every single move or transfer that they make. So ultimately, again, it's just adds a little bit more complexity, because now it's not only about dealing with a club on, hey, like we want that player, it's also the club and then the player, right? Mm-hmm. And the way I see it, obviously it is more complex. Yes, it is a lot more work in terms of scouting and recruitment, and that's why the first sporting hire that we made was a director of player recruitment, right, with Edward Gallagher coming from Brighton, and that is yeah, like more complex, and again a lot more hours. I would. But at the same time, it allows us, first of all, to truly go for the players that we want for the team that we want to build, right? While in the past, we would be conditioned by a list, right? Either the expansion draft list or the college list. Like, we would only be able to pick among those. Now, we obviously have to go out and look at the entire world, basically, and then figure out from those, like, obviously, like, with some data, we try to narrow down the list and then look at those players. And then, yes, it's a lot of work on reaching out, seeing like, hey, would she have any interest? Not. And then if there is a little bit of interest, yeah, then we perhaps progress. And yeah, it's more complex, but at the same time, it also helps us add another filter to ensure that who we're bringing in is not only the right player, but the right person for the culture that we want to build. Because now it's both sides picking, right? It's both sides saying yes. Which again, it's one more layer. So it's not only us like saying, hey, Jordan, we love you as a player, come over, and maybe this is not for you, right? Mm-hmm. And you, if this is not for you, you're not going to perform at a higher level. You're not going to want to stay for a long time, right? While, hey, now you get to pick, which is also a good thing for us, especially as we think in the long term. And that's what we're here for, right? We're here to build a legacy. So it's not about only the roster for 26, but is the roster for the years to come.
That is so fascinating to me, just as a newer fan and someone who is mostly in basketball. It is that it's like a marriage. You're going into it, both sides are wanting to be a part of it. And when you think about the player's perspective and having them, you know, be excited about wanting to be a part of something new, it's also the shiny things that you get to show them as well, like a new practice facility mm-hmm. and where they're going to play and those new performance centers. So how have those kind of been in the talks, even from the beginning, to make sure that players know that this investment is here from day one? It's not based off of how this first season goes, if we're good or we're bad. We're all in from the jump, and we want you to be a part of that.
No, obviously, like, yeah, for us, it's about making Boston a destination for players, right? So they want to come here, and our job gets easier as time goes by, because again, we're creating these amazing plays with an amazing culture that players want to be part of. If they want to, like, if that's their mindset and their values match ours. And yeah, like, part of that, it's obviously that foundation of the infrastructure, right? That unluckily is not there yet everywhere. However, I do strongly believe that, especially in this league, that will be something that down the line will be there, right? And in that regard, like, that's like one of the reasons why I wanted to come to the NWSL, because obviously, yeah, there's investment backing up the league. And it's like that investment is providing those foundations and those resources just so everybody can focus on what they do best, right? In the case of the players, in training and playing. And ultimately that is our goal, right? Mm-hmm. And many things need to happen for that. And again, a very big role is played by, okay, what's the foundation, right? Like, if we want to make them feel home here, it's not only about just providing a nice house or a nice apartment. It's also like, hey, like, where I'm walking on a daily basis, does that feel home, right? And if you have a place that's only yours and only yours, that's been built only thinking about your well-being and your performance, then that's easier to achieve, right? Like, our foundation is obviously at a better place than it might be in other places. But ultimately, I also think that at some point that will be the case for everybody. So that's also not going to be the difference maker, right? So then it's beyond that. What are the things that we need to take care of and we need to do to ensure that, hey, we ultimately, when players are here, they do feel well and they can perform at their highest level for the longest time possible. And from obviously a healthy standpoint, right? And again, yeah, then that's when we talk about the staff and then the other type of resources, external resources that perhaps are not as tangible as the training facility and the stadium, but that are as essential as the training facility and the stadium.
I love that you said that eventually that will be the standard in NWSL and really across all women's sports. Everyone's trying to catch up, but that will be the standard. But I also wanted to talk about, because you mentioned investors and that investment is really here from the beginning. You have a great investment group. Even recently, WNBA player Aaliyah Boston signing on. I mean, her last name is perfect for this. And she grew up in Boston. It was a no-brainer. It was a no-brainer, really. But other women's athletes saying, I want to put my money that I'm earning into other teams to do well and invest more. So what does it mean to you when you see investors see the value of this team and see the value of a women's sports team and the league in general? See the growth. It's going up.
100%. And look, it tells me, first of all, that in, for example, Elias' case, she's very smart. Not only on the court, but also outside of it, because she's investing her money very wisely. So that's the first thing that it tells me. But no, beyond
I'm sure
that,
you said that in the meeting. This is a great wise decision. Great decision.
I strongly believe that. But yeah, no, beyond that, obviously for me as the GM of the team, it's again not the money that they're bringing in, because again, like, thankfully there is a lot of people that are willing to put the money. But okay, beyond that, what are you bringing to the table? And yeah, like someone like Elijah, right? With her experience, not only now at the WNBA, right, but where she comes from, with obviously the local knowledge and the culture that she can bring, because ultimately the culture that we built, it's not the words that we put on the wall. It's ultimately the nature of the people that we bring in, right? Like, everybody brings a piece of culture, and obviously we have to be very intentional in that regard on who we bring into the culture, so it aligns with what we want to build. And ultimately, yeah, we just want to integrate in the Boston culture, and someone like her, not born here, but raised here, right? And yeah, like knowing what that means, obviously, is very helpful. Not only, again, for me as a foreign person to understand this, but ultimately also for all the players that will be coming into market. Because yes, we're looking and talking to a few that have ties, but a lot of the others won't, right? So yeah, again, like having those athletes involved in this will be very, very helpful from that lens. And I'm personally very happy that she is joining again. Like, even if she did not invest in the club, just the fact that she's willing to put her time to support us and help us and advise us, that's amazing already.
I love it. Okay, well, this seems like a super fun process to be a part of and to be at the start of something great. I know that it's going to be great. Before you go, though, I wanted to touch on your background just for a second. I know that you started coaching when you were, 14 years old, and you coached your first women's team at 18. So I love that this whole women's sports movement, everyone's trying to get in now, but you're like, no, I've been there. I've been there from the beginning. I've been all about women's sports. So just talk about kind of your love for coaching, how that started, and especially with the women's game.
Yeah, I would say for me, it was sudden, like an unexpected move at the time. I was just playing in my club. I wasn't a very good player, technically especially, but tactically probably like pretty smart. And I remember I used to talk a lot to my coach about like, hey, how did the team do? And like a very collective mindset. And, you know, one day he showed up and was like, hey, do you want to coach the little kids? Like, we're looking for a coach. And I was like, I never thought about coaching, but I love football, I love soccer, right? So why not? Like, let's do it. And that's how I developed the taste for that. Like, up until then, like I was focused on being a journalist. So like going your pathway more than anything else. But then figured out like, oh, like this is actually something that I do, and maybe I'm not that good at playing. So that dream that I had of playing one day like was already fading away because I was figuring out that probably I won't make it. And I realized like, hey, but there might be a career here. And then, yeah, a few years later, again, we had like, I come from a very small town near Barcelona, and there were no women's or girls teams in the club. It was a very small club. There were a few girls playing on the boys teams, but not a true girls team. And a group of girls showed up to the club. I was already, like, I was sort of the manager for the youth academy of the club. And a few girls came up and said, like, hey, we would like to train. We'd like to put a team together. And, like, it was a group of four or five. And I remember telling them, like, hey, if you can, like, have a group of 10 to 12, we can make it happen because then we can play 7v7, right? And and we can join a league and truly make the team. And I don't know, took them about 2 weeks to come back with that list. And they're like, all right, let's start it. And like, yeah, so I was the manager. I was like, yeah, I want to ensure and wanted to, like, obviously I felt something special at that time because it was the first, like, only girls team. The club had maybe a couple, years back, but wanted to make sure that, hey, we got it right so more would come, right, later. And that's how I started. And honestly, enjoyed it a lot. Just again, like it felt to me like it was that pureness of like thinking of football, enjoying it, right? Like perhaps like a lot of times, yeah, with the boys it got a little bit more complicated a lot of times, and honestly, like, yeah felt their love for it, which is the same that I felt as a little kid, and like that connected me to that, and still today I feel like connected to that love through them, and yeah, I fell in love with it.
I love that so much, so full circle in so many ways. And also I love what you said, we all have that moment where we realize, okay, you know, I'm probably not going to go pro in this, and you either go coaching or you become a journalist. So you are really, there was no way, no wrong way. You were going to find your way either way. Dome, thank you so much for your time. Good luck. I can't wait to cheer on the Boston Legacy FC. Thank you for joining the show.
Thank you very much, Jordan. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's all the time we have today. Thanks for listening to She's Got Next. I'm Jordan Robinson, and I'll see you next time.